This conversation about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel was recorded in January 2018. We'll be back next week with new episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. Amy Sherman Palladino's signature project was Gilmore Girls. Now she has a new project on Amazon called The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It stars Rachel Brosnahan as a woman living in New York in the late 1950s who separates from her husband and finds herself in stand-up comedy.
I was delightful. I was a goddamn flower. I smelled like roses and sunshine shone out of my ass.
Brosnahan just won a Golden Globe for her performance and the show won for Outstanding Comedy Series. So we figured it was time to dive in. Here with me in the studio is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And Glenn and I are joined for this conversation by two of our favorite women. First, from NPR's very own Weekend Edition, Barry Hardiman. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
And also a writer and editor and thinker about music and many other good things, Katie Pressley. Hi, Katie.
Howdy.
I'm so happy to have you guys here.
Thanks.
Glenn, you wrote about this show a little bit a while ago.
Right. I reviewed it for Morning Edition.
Right. You reviewed it for Morning Edition. How did you review it? What were your thoughts?
I like it a lot because I am here for Amy Sherman Palladino's artisanal blend, which is fast-talking brunettes who are charming monsters to whom the entire world genuflex.
Yeah.
And they're imperious moms. So that's pretty much, that's the Bunheads, that's the Gilmore Girls thing.
Yeah.
Brosnahan's a star, right? Mm-hmm. So if you didn't like anything else about this show, you'd love this performance. Brosnahan was asked at one point what attracted her to the role, and she said, Midge Maisel is a character who exudes confidence in every situation 24/7. And I can understand what would appeal about that role to an actress. That said, a little caveat here, confidence and privilege are traveling companions.
Yeah.
You very rarely see one without the other.
Yeah.
And when these two travel together, weird things can happen.
Yeah.
Like, for example, an instance in the second episode where a woman of color is literally pushed off the stage to make room for Midge Maisel. Now, that is a thing that in and of itself has a certain, like, optics. I remember seeing that going, what's going on here? Why am I watching this? What's going on? When you put that in the context of Amy Sherman Palladino, who is often sort of backgrounded people of color on her shows.
For sure.
It just kind of lines up in a weird way. Mm-hmm. That said, I think the period setting is A, gorgeous, and B, it's forcing her to do some things. It's playing to her backhand, so she can't rely on the same old stuff that she does.
The references and
the constant pop culture references. And also, this might sound a little bit weird, but I really like that she's finally getting to lean into Jewish culture in a way, because when she did the stuff on Gilmore Girls about Boston Brahmins and Greenwich wasps, we'd get a bunch of DAR jokes, and then it kind of felt like we were kind of hitting that same beat over and over again.
It was a very, very light touch with that stuff, which it's not here.
No. Not here. It is full in. Yeah. And I think it's enriching the show. A lot more other stuff to say about, but I'll hear from some other folks first.
All right, cool. Katie, I heard that you really dug this show. I had heard a little bird told me. what do you like about it?
I have to out myself very quickly here as not a Gilmore Girls fan, and I liked the character of Midge, and I really liked Brosnahan's performance. I was just, she's so charismatic, and I just, like, I'm not usually a binge watcher, and I watched, like, two episodes a day, which is a lot.
Which is, for Katie Pressley, that's a binge and a half.
It is. I liked a lot how Midge comes to the revolution of her life. She comes to feminism in a way that is, it's not even quite feminism. She comes to her personal revolution in a way that was compelling to me and not irritating. I think Amy Sherman Palladino has, the women on her shows tend to like spring fully formed from each other's foreheads.
Yeah.
And this did not have that to me.
I think that's a good point.
And I also really liked all the dresses.
Oh my gosh. I have to agree with, Glenn mentioned this too. I think the period look of this show, I don't think of myself as being like a period show, like enthusiast necessarily, but the particular look of this show, how colorful it is, how swingy the dresses are.
This is expensive. The sets.
The sheer shantung.
The coats. My gosh, the coats, the swingy coats are all I have ever wanted.
But that one tracking shot through an entire garment district warehouse that just went on and on and on. There is money being thrown at this
thing. Yeah, I think there is. Barry, how did this strike you?
Well, now that we're talking about the clothes, no, I will say, so I, not just all of those touchstones are me. I am a period show girl, so I thought, not a period show girl, but I love the look of it. I am here for Barbara Streisand singing Happy Days Are Here Again.
Well, yes. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Who isn't?
I think her performance is magnetic. I can't take my eyes off her when she's on the screen, Rachel Brosnahan. I, too, love the depth of the gefilte fish. There is a lot of that, and that is actually, I have to say, you don't actually see that kind of, that part of Judaism at a certain time. Was really sort of, as a Jewish lady myself,
sort of
was
Upper West Side, yeah, wealthy.
Upper West Side, wealthy, having clawed a little bit, you know, the mm-hmm. difference between Abe and Father
Moshe.
And Moshe. Excuse me.
Let us tell you, Barry, it's Moshe.
It's something Jewish. I can't remember. It's like Rosenberg, right? Uh-huh. Anyway, sorry. But I love there's some wonderful subtleties between in their relationship and that particular, you know, set piece of, you know, on the Upper West Side. That said, I am happier when I am watching her do stand up mm-hmm. and when I'm watching her talk to Susie. Mm-hmm. And I am happier when I am, for a while, for like the first 2 to 4 episodes, I was like, God, we're getting a lot of exposition. When are we just going to get rid of Joel? Because I could just mm-hmm. get rid of Joel.
Yeah.
Like, I could just like, I can't yeah. even, like, the yeah. even there's like an early on scene where he's like in the corner looking creepy and I know we're supposed to, and I can't. I mean, I'd way rather live with Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah. So Tony Shalhoub plays yes. Her father.
And has a couple of lovely moments.
Yeah.
But I like the two family stuff I'm into, but I just don't care about him. And you could see the moment of him recognizing her genius on stage coming from a mile away. And it didn't make it any less satisfying when I saw it. But, you know, ensuing plot points, I found, you know, it feels a little rote to me.
I agree with you. I was more interested in the sort of the show business
yeah.
story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned stuff.
Than I was the domestic mm-hmm. story, which is interesting because one of the things that I like about the show is that it allows her to be genuinely ambivalent about motherhood, mm-hmm. which is almost
from
never,
the get-go, mm-hmm.
which is almost yep. never allowed in a way that doesn't immediately get coded as because she's depressed or, mm-mm. you know, or because somebody has stopped her from yep. truly discovering that the only thing she really wants is babies. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the way that her domestic life is kind of not what she's excited about, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure that I'm excited about it either. And there's a lot of time spent. I agree with you that the stuff with her parents, where they're kind of dealing with her being separated and how mm-hmm. they feel about that, is more interesting mm-hmm. than her actual relationship with Joel, mm-hmm. who I think Joel is just underdeveloped mm-hmm. a little bit. I think
maybe miscast.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm not sure they have a strong idea of kind of who he is and why he would up and leave his wife and kids, which is a very specific kind of thing to do. Especially at that time. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we haven't talked about very much is I also love the Alex Borstein performance as Susie, her yeah. manager. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I feel like in Midge and Susie, mm-hmm. you get the two sort of ways of Amy Sherman-Palladino mm-hmm. dialogue mm-hmm. coming off. Mm-hmm. You have Midge, who is sort of the sparklier, showier
Lorelai,
lighter Lorelai.
Right.
And then you have in Susie, you have this more gravelly, more grounded, more angry type of personality that I think carries a different strain of the Palladinosity of her dialogue, even though I recognize them both as very ASP characters. There's a real divergence, which hasn't always been true in her stuff. If you look at Lorelai and Rory mm. and all that, there's always been a kind of genteel quality to most of the women that she's written. And then you get this, I don't know.
Grittier. It's yeah. like a, yeah.
It's also another, it's a really, speaking of period piece, mm-hmm. Susie is a really interesting other way to be a woman in the
time.
50s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Midge is performing in this Greenwich, like, dumpy underground gaslight mm-hmm. cafe, I think it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They don't serve beer there, never. And Susie is of that world. And so you see some of the, like, tag yourself, I'm spoken word with tambourine, you know? You see this hilarious mm-hmm. cast of performers. Mm-hmm. I was really pleased to see that kind of beat, especially because the beat movement was not great for women. Mm-hmm. And it was great to see like a beatnik woman also doing a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The period setting also does something really smart to the comedy. It completely obviates the Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip problem, mm-hmm. where we're constantly told that this show is brilliant and cutting yes. edge and leading the national dialogue. Nice. And every time we see an actual sketch, it's like a ribald Rodgers and Hammerstein pastiche.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
terrible.
It's like, well, mm-hmm. what's going on here? This stand-up isn't funny to me, but mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be. All it has to do is be of that time. It has mm-hmm. to feel right. If that's not enough, I mean, the show does do a lot of stoking the furnace of how brilliant she is, because that's the engine of the show. Because mm-hmm. Amy Sherman-Palladino has said this show is going to end when she arrives on Johnny Carson's couch. Mm-hmm. That's the arc of the show. So to get us there, her manager has to tell her she's brilliant. Lenny Bruce yeah. has to be a fan, which, uh-huh. come on.
Wouldn't it just have been someone named Penny Roos?
I know,
something?
Right.
It's a little yeah. bit of a cheat, she has I will
to,
say.
She has to walk by a group of protesters in Washington Square Park.
Oh, God.
And say, here, I have something to say. That's, and they all turn to her going,
Jane Jacobs plucks her out of the crowd right? and yeah, says, exactly. tell us your story. And she's yeah. like, don't mind if I do.
That's again, the pushing aside.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Exactly. But I think the show is doing something smart with its reminding us that she's brilliant, but it's also trying to keep us liking her, even though she can be sort of thoughtless and imperious in ways. She's beautiful, right? But she works at it.
Oh,
we
yeah.
see
mm-hmm.
how hard mm-hmm. and how ridiculously right. and how obsessively
I really,
she works at it.
They have a sequence with her and then later also a sequence with her mother, mm-hmm. sort of showing how it's not just a matter of the effort that they make to look beautiful to the outside world when they leave their homes, mm-hmm. but it's also that for these women at this time, even their marriages were not a safe place to look how they really looked.
Right.
You had to also make your husband believe that you woke up looking like a magazine cover. And I have no idea how historically accurate that is, but it feels right, right for what they are trying to say about Midge. Mm-hmm. And it's like she's, I don't love the word feisty, but she's, you know, she is a kind of, you know, firecracker kind of lady. But at the same time, she's also a lady who measures her calves and thighs.
Calf to ankle proportion, yeah.
She says every day.
Every day.
To just make sure that she is perfect and looks perfect. And it's interesting to me to give her that kind of vanity.
Right.
And yet to also kind of explain how she got that way.
It's also interesting that the show is hedging its bets to keep us on her side by having her stumble into stand-up, not
yes.
have it be something that she wants. Now, I think that's interesting. I went back and forth on it because it's like, why couldn't she want this? Well, the timing, the period setting means mm-hmm. it wouldn't be a thing for her necessarily, but it could be.
Yeah.
And the fact that she refuses the call, I don't know how to do this, I don't want to do this.
Uh-huh.
And that if the show was just coasting on her natural ability, she gets up drunk, she gets up high, she's awesome, perfect, wonderful. She isn't. Like, if you listen to the reaction of that first set, people don't really know what to do with it, which I thought was really good. I didn't mm-hmm. want people to be fawning all over her.
Although I
in
will say, I wish she wasn't always stumbling by
exactly.
mistake onto the, that was a little frustrating to
yeah.
me. But I will say about the comedy, it's really hard to do comedy within comedy. Like that mm-hmm. is really hard.
It sure is.
And while it's not my favorite comedy, those are legit jokes. Mm-hmm. They are actually, I actually laughed at some of the, I loved the, you know, this is the most Goyish name in the, like that, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that was a Lenny Bruce joke.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a real joke.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is the stuff that's written,
yeah.
I think is dynamite. And that was the thing that I every time someone's in front of a mic on the show, I get the oh no, is mm-hmm. it gonna, and it and I really didn't have very many causes to cringe.
And
yeah.
the fact that the series is going to be about her honing this
mm-hmm.
natural ability
mm-hmm.
and failing and bombing
mm-hmm.
and that's important,
because yeah.
that means that she's taking her natural ability to its limits and then she's working hard. This is how the show keeps us liking her
yeah.
even though she can be a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Working hard to shape it. That's important.
Yeah. Did you enjoy the music, Katie Pressley, music person?
I was just going to ask you about the music because I loved it. And I'm not even familiar with all of the songs, but what I think it did perfectly is left the heavy lifting to the actors,
mm-hmm.
but managed to find songs over and over again that made me say, I can't believe there's a song for exactly what she's feeling.
That's
right
what
now.
Cabaret is. It's
yeah.
for everything.
Yeah.
It's like country
it's
music,
true.
But in silk.
It's
you know?
True.
Whoa. New Twitter bio line. Yeah, I was so impressed by that because so often shows use the music as sledgehammers of like, are you feeling this way yet? Here, I'll play Mad World one more time.
Right.
You know, and
play.
Exactly. Right. Again, it was just like uncanny how precision point accurate these songs were.
Yeah.
Oh, loved it.
And speaking of musical, like the English that Tony Shalhoub puts on every line out of that guy's mouth. This is a this role is a bathtub full of bubbles that he is just luxuriating in a way that feels kind of Borscht Belt, that feels kind of old school, really old school.
And it's really funny because, of course, a lot of people got to know Tony Shalhoub playing a heavily accented Italian cab driver on Wings.
Wings. That's right. And there's a moment, you know, I don't like it when shows show us something and then tell us something to kind of underline it. But there was a moment that we were talking about Joel before.
Yeah.
There's a moment that kind of unlocked that character for me, which is when Tony Shalhoub's character, Abe, reminds his daughter that he said to her when she went away to college, do not marry a weak man. And boom, that's all of a sudden, I was convinced that the show knew that it was seeing in Joel exactly what I was seeing in Joel. I was not liking Joel for reasons I couldn't quite put my finger on, besides the one he left his wife. But there was something intrinsic to that character that I couldn't quite find.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the key. And that's what he plays over the course of the season, a weak guy.
And his own father underlines it in many, many scenes
In
as
many,
well.
Many scenes, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. We like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like this. Yeah. All right. Well, we want to know what you think of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it will be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Curio Collection by Hilton. With all Curio Collection by Hilton hotels, there's something more to discover. Take the foodie-forward resorts of Sai Lagoon in the Maldives and the Iguerone Hotel in Spain. Iguerone's Michelin-starred chef Diego Gallegos romances palates with multicultural and environmentally friendly dishes. Sai Lagoon takes personalization to a new level by using natural ingredients to create unique plates for each guest. Are you curious? Visit Hilton.com/NPR. Support for NPR and the following message come from Kroger. Did you know 1 in 8 Americans struggle with hunger? Yet 40% of the food produced in the U.S. gets thrown away. Kroger believes that if just 1/3 of that wasted food could be redirected to people in need, it would more than cover unmet food needs across the country while helping to protect our planet. That's what Kroger is doing through their Zero Hunger, Zero Waste Foundation. Last year alone, Kroger donated 325 million meals to local food banks. It's part of their goal to achieve zero hunger and zero waste by 2025. Learn more at Kroger.com/ZHZW.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
London Spy is a series that is now 4 years old, but it's still available on Netflix. It's 5-hour-long episodes, originally on the BBC, starring Ben Whishaw as this hedonistic twink who hooks up with this secretive mathematician in London, gets drawn into a conspiracy involving murder, blackmail, and international espionage. It's stylish, it's sexy, it's kind of disturbing. It's got great performances. Jim Broadbent shows up because that's the law.
Sure.
He's a mentor who helps Ben Whishaw's character with his investigation, and he gets to say all these wonderful, chewy things about the difference between wealth and class. It's really a lot of fun. Charlotte Rampling. You got Charlotte Rampling in a manor house.
I just fainted.
I know, right? She is so good and evil and icy in this thing that at one point I was watching it alone in my apartment and I went to myself, Charlotte Rampling. It was awesome. She's just great. So it doesn't quite stick the dismount, and a lot of people have watched it say the same thing, something about the ending that doesn't quite satisfy. But if you want a good psychic whiplash, your first screen, Paddington, which is voiced by Ben Whishaw, which is about a character voiced by Ben Whishaw who gets up to all kinds of hijinks in London. And then you
open, a bear, right?
He's a bear. Mm-hmm, and then London Spy, who's a twink. It's different. Who gets up and to all kinds of hijinks in London. Sexier hijinks. Very different. I really like London Spy.
Yeah. I didn't even feed you that bear joke on purpose.
Did not. I figured it was coming.
It just came to be. Thank you.
Where can I see it? Sorry.
Netflix.
Okay, sorry.
Netflix.
I'm going to go see it now.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Barry Hardiman, what is making you happy this week?
So I was made happy after watching Miss Maisel by the music, actually.
Yes.
And what I did was I went back in time. And since I wasn't able to buy the dresses, I went and I listened to a lot of Blossom Dearie, mm-hmm. which I feel like she's sort of undersung or underknown. And I, again, like I'm a huge Shirley Horn, Sarah Vaughan, I love these women, but there's something, the little girl voice and the albums, all of which are on Spotify from when she is very young to very old. It, all the Verve studio recordings are so wonderful. It is these really, it's all of those deep cuts that you don't remember. It's I'm Hip, which is a hilarious song about the Beats.
I dig, I'm in step. When it was hip to be hip, I was hip. I don't blow, but I'm a fan. Look at me swing, ring-a-ding-ding. I even call my girlfriend, man, I'm so hip.
Every Saturday it is such a lovely, I'm making breakfast for my family or for myself in the morning. I put it on, I'm wearing a bathrobe, and now it's called a dressing gown. And I have, maybe I put my coffee in not in a mug. Maybe I put it in a cup with a saucer. It genuinely made me happy this week.
Good. And I do want to say, people who don't think that they know Blossom Dearie, if you're old enough to have watched Schoolhouse Rock, she sang the figure eight song. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Barry Hardyman. Katie Presley, what is making you happy this week?
Space opera is making me happy this week.
All right, then.
I am two-thirds of the way through Anne Leckie's sci-fi trilogy. It's called the Imperial Roch Trilogy. The books are called Ancillary Justice, Ancillary Sword, and Ancillary Mercy. I've read the first two of those. So I recommend them on two different levels. I recommend them to anyone who loves sci-fi because treachery and adventure and unpronounceable names abound. But why it is making me, Katie Presley, happy this week is because every pronoun in the books is she.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
So this empire is called Roch, and the people are called Rodchai. And to the Rodchai, gender is completely unimportant. Their language does not have words for it. But other planets in the galaxy or in the empire do have words for it. So the default is she, and then occasionally someone will be corrected. But the narrator, whose name is Breck, I think, unpronounceable names, continues to say she forever because that's how her brain works. So I just cannot put into words what a salve it is for my weary soul to read 300-page books mm-hmm. where everybody is a she until proven otherwise or something. You know, it's so great. And so the first book, I understood probably a third of the words. And the second book, maybe 3/5. So like the third one, I'm hoping for 5/7.
Nice.
And I'm going to call it a win.
Progress and learning.
Super, super recommend.
Oh, thank you so much, Katie Presley. What is making me happy this week? I made a commitment that I was going to try very hard to watch at least one episode of all of these 60-plus TV shows premiering in the month of January. Oof. One that I really enjoyed is called Building Giants, and it's on the Science Channel. In Building Giants, they follow the construction of something enormous. The first episode was about Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. And they filmed over, it looks like, the several years that it took to build Mercedes-Benz Stadium. They filmed how they built this gigantic retractable roof and the moment that they tested this roof that fits together in this interesting, like, pedal design so that the pieces all come in and twist around each other and lock in. I think if you have a kid who is interested in construction and construction trucks and, you know, big objects, which are often fascinating to little kids, there's a lot of kind of, you know, enormous stuff getting picked up and hauled and moved and put in place and all the winches and all the stuff that it takes to get things where they're supposed to go. I think anybody would say that if you're going to talk about a sports stadium, there's a bunch of other stuff, the financing of sports stadiums and all the other things. There's no effort to get into that. It's strictly a construction show. So I'm going to recommend Building Giants on the Science Channel, particularly for those of you, and I know you are many, who have kids who are interested in, you know, engineering things and building and construction. So that is what is making me happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show.
You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can find me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon. You can follow Barry at B Hardiman and Katie at Love Is Maroon. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica _ Reedy and our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff. That's KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music that you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see you all right back here next week.
Hey, it's not just you. This week does feel like it's gone on forever. When it is over, join me, Sam Sanders, to get some perspective. Catch my show, It's Been a Minute, where we look back on the news and culture and everything else. Download it every weekend from NPR.